Welcome back to another spectacular match day, but watch this. Looks like the fans are playing Coral's free reward shaker. The half and half scarfers shaking decisively for once. They bagged a super boost. Next to them, the prawn sandwich brigade. Oh, they've shaken up a free bet after that free lunch. Play Coral's free reward shaker to win guaranteed daily rewards and offers this season. Coral, we're here for it.
18 plus UK, max one reward or offer per player per day. Reward restrictions, requirements and T's and C's apply. Gambleaware.org.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Welcome back to another edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel the Tower, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 a month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. I'm John Arezzi. Terry Collins is out competing at a celebrity golf outing this week, and later in the week, he's heading back up to New York for a few personal appearances we'll tell you about later in the show. So Terry called the bullpen and brought in two guest hosts today, New York Mets Hall of Famer and former captain of the Amazons, New York's own John Franco. John, welcome to the Terry Collins Show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
How does it feel doing a guest host deal?
It feels good. I saw Terry a couple of times during the opening homestand and filled me in. The do's and don'ts of being on the show, but it feels good coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah, well, happy to have you here. It's going to be a good one today. Joining us for her second appearance in just a few seconds here will be Newsday columnist and analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Laura Albanese. And then we have something pretty cool. We'll be bringing on two diehard Met fans who are sisters who went viral on the internet recently with a called walk-off home run from Francisco Lindor at Citi Field. So Catherine and Ali Liano will join us later on. So that should be fun. And I think, John, you said you saw that video, right?
Yeah, I saw that clip. I saw that the two sisters were talking, and then I don't know which one said Lindor's going to hit a home run. And as soon as she said he's going to hit a home run, I saw the ball, the flight, and landed a couple of rows in front of them, and they were just going crazy.
Right in their section. Crazy.
Yeah. I think I mentioned too, I'm going to ask them to pick my lottery tickets if they can make calls.
There you go. That's good. We'll see how really good and clairvoyant they are. But we got a good one today. Let's get right to the leadoff. We'll bring on Newsday and SNY's Laura Albanese, who also co-hosts a great podcast called First Time Listener, Long Time Caller. Laura, welcome back to the Terry Collins Show.
I can't believe you guys had me back. Thank you so much. I thought I wore out my welcome.
Well, the fan mail that we got and the emails and just such a great response. They were like, bring Laura on every week.
That's way too sweet. It's so nice to see you guys.
It's great to see you. And you know John. Do you know John at all?
I think we've run into each other a few times over at Citi Field. You were there for the St. John's Rick Pitino press conference, yes. I remember.
Yeah, I was. I had to give the kid Zuby some pitching lessons before he threw out the first pitch. He was very nervous, never picked up a baseball, so I had him in the cage for about 10 minutes throwing. And he did well, too.
I was so nervous for him because he had mentioned that he had never played baseball before. And the you're not allowed to cheer in the press box, but we were cheering for that kid.
He threw a strike too, which was good. I was just worried he's going to bounce it. As long as he didn't bounce it, he was fine.
He was great.
Yeah. And Laura, you were a fan of John's, you know, years ago, and he was on the mound.
Yeah, no, I grew up watching both the Mets and the Yankees, but I grew up a Mets fan, so obviously, I love myself a reliever. So, John, you were one of my favorite players growing up. So it was always a pleasure, kind of seeing you come out there, especially being the captain of the team.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, we're gonna get right into this past weekend with the Mets. The Mets suffered their most frustrating loss of the season on Sunday, losing in walk-off fashion for the second time in 3 days against the Nationals. At one point, they were cruising ahead 7-1, before you know it, things fell apart. Soto misses a ball. He lost it in the sun. Jose Buteau got hit hard, as did Ryan Stanek, and then Pete Alonso with that errant throw. It was just kind of an ugly ending to what looked to be a very promising game. Let's get your thoughts from both of you on that game. And it seems like there was a little buckling, a little cracking in the bullpen, maybe from overwork. John, I want to get your take on that and then get to Laura.
Well, I did see the game yesterday. Yeah, there was a little crack. I mean, but, you know, listen, you have to give those guys a lot of credit. They're starting pitching and the bullpen. They've been doing an exceptional job from day one. And you're going to have those type of games. But when you have a 7-1 lead and going into the seventh, those usually hopefully come out on victorious on that. But unfortunately, yesterday, Buteau and Stanek didn't do their job. I forgot who came in after Buteau, and he got out. He was in a jam, too.
Brazapan?
Razvan, yeah. He worked out of bases loaded, I believe, and he got out of it too. So you're going to have days like that. The bullpen, you know, is used almost every day. You know, the starters, the last couple of days, the starters have been going deep into the game. I think Clay Holmes went 5 innings a couple of days ago. So you need the starters to go a little bit deep, cut the game down a little shorter for the bullpen, give those guys a little bit of rest. But all in all, I have no complaints about the way the bullpen has gone this year. I think they've done a fabulous job. I think the big surprise is the starting pitching. The starting pitching has been outstanding. So I think everybody was concerned about the starting pitching going into the season. And that's a lot of credit to Jeremy Hefner. You know, he gets those guys, you know, right frame of mind, get them believing in their stuff. And it shows on the field the way they've been pitching.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at that game, I mean, you look at it as in a vacuum and you're like, oh, no, you know, this is not a good sign. But, I mean, you're going to have games like this, like you said, John. I mean, this team has gotten off to this phenomenal start. But, you know, you can't expect perfection over 162 games. And you do look at that workload. I mean, I was looking it up. I think they have 104 innings pitched already, the relief corps. And that is, like, my one concern because – as the season goes on, that's what you're going to look at. You're going to look at the workload and you're going to worry whether or not this is going to be sustainable, not because the talent isn't there. I think David Stearns did a really, really good job of putting together that relief corps, but you have to wonder, you know, are these arms going to erode? Is it going to be too taxing over a long period of time? And when you do have a converted reliever in Clay Holmes, when you do have to protect Kodai Senga a little bit, those arms, you're going to need them. And I think Carlos Mendoza is already looking at, like, Max Kranich's workload. It's something that's very much at the forefront of his mind. So far, I've liked how Mendoza has handled that bullpen. But you got to hope that Frankie Montas comes back and he's an inning eater, that Sean Manaea comes back and he's an inning eater, and hopefully get another arm possibly at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. The workload eventually is going to catch up to them. And that's, like you said, hopefully the starters go deeper into the game. And that shortens the game up for Manaea and give those guys, you know, a couple of days off or a day off. Listen, they've been doing a great job. Like we said before, you're going to have some hiccups. It's a long season, peaks and valleys, and just hopefully they don't fall in that valley too often.
Yeah. I guess my one question mark is, you know, we saw when Edwin Diaz got hurt, how much it kind of reverberated over through the rest of the bullpen a few years back. And now, you know, Edwin Diaz has the highest ERA of anybody on that pitching staff. And so you kind of have to wonder, he's bent, but he hasn't really broken. But they do need that elite version of Edwin Diaz, I feel, in order to be effective down the stretch.
Well, absolutely. I don't know. Is it hip? I don't know. I don't even know why he wasn't in the game yesterday. He pitched Saturday. I know that. I was surprised not to see him in the game yesterday. If that injury is really that bad, he can't pitch 2 days in a row, then they're going to have some issues. So I was surprised he wasn't in the game. Stanek's a good veteran pitcher. Unfortunately for him, he got 2 days with the Nationals. They got him twice and later in the game, and he was losing pitch and blew the save twice. But I trust him to close games if Diaz can't do it. But my question is, like, why wasn't he in the game? Is he that hurt where he can't pitch 2 days in a row?
Yeah, and like when I look at that, it also makes me wonder, well, how long has this been a lingering issue? Is this one of the reasons why he's getting, like, hit a little bit? And of course, you never know, because you only have what they tell you, and they're not going to tell you everything.
It's a big secret now.
So for sure.
They'll never tell you. They'll never tell you until they have to, trust me.
No. And then you find out, like, 6 months later, and you're like, he went through what? He's getting off surgery on where?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know he had knee surgery. When did he have that?
Oh, okay. That's not my favorite thing, but one of the funniest parts of the off season, where it's like October and November, and they're like, oh, he just had, like, surgery on this torn leg. I'm like, excuse me?
Surprise! That was a Christmas gift.
Yeah, there we go.
It's the art of managing the media as well, I guess, you know. Yeah. One thing that, John, I'd like to get your perspective on, you know, two losses in three games, the way they both ended on the walk-offs. And a lot of it is mental, not just your physical skills, obviously. But I want to go back to your career, not necessarily saying what's going on with the Mets today. Even on an unconscious level, can – losses like the Mets sustained yesterday, or Sunday rather, on Friday, could that kind of carry over a little bit into a team's momentum? Can that kind of affect the momentum if they don't really turn a page quickly?
No, I don't think so. I mean, speaking for this team, from what I've saw at this team has a never say die attitude. They are in every game. They could be down by three runs. Last year, you saw how many games they won late in the season and late innings. They got the perfect attitude. You know, it's only one game. You got to turn the page, forget about it. There's nothing you can do about yesterday's loss, but there's something you could do about today's game. And today's game is the game that you have to worry about. If you worry about the loss on Friday night and the loss yesterday, then you're going to get into problems. But you have the short-term memory. That's why you play every day. Every day is a different day. You never know what's going to happen today.
Right, exactly. And Laura, your column in Newsday on Saturday, just kind of changing gears a little bit, getting over to the Yankee side and Devin Williams. In your column, you said that Williams might be best served by being removed as the closer for now, and it seemed like Aaron Boone and the Yankee organization kind of felt the same way, and they made that move late Sunday. A closer that once had it and suddenly struggles. I want to get both your and John's opinion on this. Tell us about what you saw from Williams this season in comparison to maybe covering the team last year when he was with the Brewers. And what have you noticed about him? And then, John, I'd like to get your thoughts on another little topic, which would be the home run that Pete hit against him last year, if that had any carryover effect. But Laura first, and then John.
Yeah, it is really interesting with Devin Williams, because even though he's been hurt sporadically throughout his career, this is a guy with really overpowering stuff. He's got that fastball, he's got that airbender changeup, and neither pitch is really grading out particularly well right now. In addition to that, I mean, you know, I did ask Boone about this, where it's like, is it overblown, the whole idea of, oh God, he has to pitch in New York, and the added pressure? And he said, generally speaking, it's overblown, but it is something that we're going to look at, because this is a new environment. You've got new teammates. You've got a new house. He just became a dad. That's a whole lot of change. And then to go on the mound as a closer, which John knows better than anyone, I feel like it's very adrenaline-inducing. There is some emotion there. There are pitchers who pitch with emotion. And then to be booed and to hear "We want Weaver," talking about Luke Weaver, and suddenly, you know, the stuff that's been working your entire life isn't working anymore. That has to erode your confidence. And if you can't believe in yourself and you don't have that conviction when you're up there, depending on the player, I do think that there's a psychological aspect there. I mean, how many times have we seen guys who have pitched really well throughout their career and suddenly like, oh, he's got the yips. And it's like the worst thing in the world. And no one can really figure out necessarily why. There's something off with his mechanics, something off with the psychology of it. So with Williams, he's got too much talent to have a plus 11 ERA. That pitch is too good. He's too good of a pitcher. So I do think stashing him in lower leverage situations for right now probably benefits him and benefits the Yankees in the long run. Because if Devin Williams can be Devin Williams, and then you also have Luke Weaver in there. And I mean, that bullpen is really, really powerful. So it kind of benefits everybody. And, you know, it'll get some of the fans off his back for a little bit, which I think is probably helpful at this point, at the stage of the game. I mean, that was his first blown save. He hasn't given up a home run. But hitters have a 429 batting average on balls put in play. So they're making some decent quality of contact, and he's getting some bad luck. And when you have those two things together, that can really kind of eat at you.
Especially at the end of the game when you have nobody coming in after you. So, you know, that, like you said, if he comes in the eighth inning, he's got Weaver in case he gets in trouble. You're in the ninth inning, you look over your shoulder, there's nobody warming up. It's all on you. But I'd like to go back to what you said. It takes a special kind of person to play here in New York, because I remember going on a couple of Nike golf outings, and there were a couple of free agent, Greg Biggio, a bunch of guys. And I used to say, why don't you come play for the Mets? And a lot of them don't want to come here because they don't want to deal with the press. They don't want to deal with the pressure. They don't want to deal with the fans. You know, I'm sure that Williams hasn't been booed or wasn't booed in Milwaukee the last 3 or 4 years that he was there. It takes a special person to come here. I think you have to have some thick skin and short-term memory here. And you can't lose your confidence. If you lose your confidence, then you're in trouble. So I think by him being put into the setup role and put it into non-pressure situations or situations where build his confidence, I think he'll be fine. But you still got to go. You got to work through it. You got to kind of block out the fans. You know, they're going to boo you. They're going to cheer you no matter what. If you do bad, listen, if you don't do your job, you deserve to be booed. And if you do your job, they're going to cheer you on. So you can't take it too personal, because he can go out and save 5 games in a row and they'll forget about the boos and they'll love him all that time. So I think he'll be fine. It's just maybe a little fine tuning. Coming to a new ball team, a new ballpark, a new division. You know, he was in Milwaukee. That division that he was in last year wasn't like facing Baltimore and Toronto and Boston. You know, you're facing, you know, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis, who has been struggling. So it's a whole different animal, especially the American League East. And I think he'll be fine. It's just like, it's a new environment and he'll just have to get used to it.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the things I did notice is like after that blown save, understandably, he's going to be upset, but he's surrounded by cameras. His entire demeanor, it looked defeated. And you don't want to see that out of your closer. You want to see somebody with confidence, because if we can see it in the media, then the guy in the batter's box can definitely see it. Well, and then you have a problem.
When you're coming from Milwaukee, where you have maybe 2 TV stations with video, yeah, and now you're in Yankee Stadium, where you have 15, 20, you know, media, press, columnists, everybody. It's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ballgame. And it's hard to stay upbeat when you don't do your job. And I'm sure he feels terrible coming over to the Yankees and in a trade. He was one of the best relief pitchers in the game the last couple of years. You know, the Yankees were so happy to get him because that's what they were struggling a little bit. And Weaver did a great job last year. So if he comes back to his form and Weaver, they're going to have a good 1-2 punch out of that bullpen.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree as well. And the fans can be tough on you. I mean,
tell me about it. I grew up here and I still get booed.
I tell you, one market
they don't care where you're from.
They don't. I mean, one market that could be even worse than, you know, the fans at Yankee Stadium or whatever in Citi Field. They've the fans of Met fans have been really nice this year to everybody. So yeah, that's what I love about it.
They've been playing well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for now, then no one's going.
I remember when we got Mike Piazza in the trade, and like the first 2 weeks to 10 days, maybe 3 weeks, he wasn't hitting as well, and they started booing.
They let him
and
have it.
I said, you got to be kidding me. This is like he was one of the top 5 players in the game when we got him. I said, just stop booing. He'll be fine. Just give him some time. And lo and behold, you know, you got to get comfortable in your surroundings, you know, and I'm sure Williams is going to get comfortable in his surroundings. And, you know, Soto, they want Soto to hit a home run every at bat. And you know, they're concerned that he's not hitting home runs, but he's on base a lot. By the end of the year, I guarantee his numbers will be right where they should be.
Yeah. I think one of my biggest, it's almost like an ongoing bit. It didn't happen this year because he was injured, but every year at the beginning of the year, Giancarlo Stanton has his annual booing for like the first month. I'm like, and I say it all the time, like, this guy is going to be a Hall of Famer, and I hear him get booed every year.
And then he comes back and has a great playoffs, and everybody forgets about what happened.
Exactly. He's so prolific. His power is incredible. Yeah. And I'm sure he'll be back, and he'll be getting some cheers when he gets back. But the markets are interesting. I mean, the Philadelphia fans are even – they're just so vicious. I mean
– No, really?
Yeah, yeah. I think back, and this is another Mitch Williams, if you remember, a Phillies pitcher closer who gave up the game-winning home run in the 93 World Series to Joe Carter. I mean, he was never the same after that. They never let him forget it, and it really kind of derailed him in a lot of ways. Yeah. And, you know, we just hope, you know, the same thing doesn't happen to Devin Williams and then he comes back and, you know.
But he didn't give up the home run in the World Series and lose the World Series for his team. So it's only April. It's only April. We're going into May.
That's right.
Hopefully the warm weather.
Yeah, it is a different situation.
It's a totally different situation. You know, the Philly fans booed Santa Claus. So, you know, it's, my daughter goes to school down in Philadelphia, and she went to a Philly game, and I tell her, don't wear nothing with New York on it. Don't do nothing. So, they could be different, but they're, you know what? They're diehard fans. They love their teams. And you can't blame them.
That is true. Let's get back to the Mets pitching. And AJ Minter left the game with a tricep strain, most likely heading to the IL. Probably be announced today, tomorrow. And Edwin Diaz, of course, with a little tweak in his hip. How concerning is that for the team with your setup man now injured, closer, having some issues with it? I mean. Who do you go to right after that? John first, and then Laura.
It's next man up. You know, whoever you feel is confident. I mean, listen, over the course of the year, it's a long year. There's going to be injuries. I think it was. Did I read this morning? Was it he has a strained lat or is it tricep? I'm not sure.
I think it's a lat.
Yeah,
is it a lat? It's not a tricep.
Yeah.
It's a lat.
Yeah. Okay. I think he thought after the game it was something in his tricep, but I think I read this morning it was his lat. So,
okay.
Listen, it's the next man up. Like, you know, Diaz is the closer. Stanek will be the setup man, and everybody, and you piece everything together from there. So, you know, the kid Danny Young is probably going to get some big innings now to face some lefties. I saw him in spring training, worked with him, talked with him. Try to build his confidence up. He's a kid that has got some good stuff. His job is to get lefties out, and the more successful you are, the more confident you walk around with your chest sticking out. You know, you're doing your job. But it's those days when you have your bad outings and you don't do your job. You have to. Jim Cotto always told me years ago when he was my pitching coach in Cincinnati. He said, when you wake up, you turn the page and look up at the sky because the sun came out and it's a new day. So you got to turn the page and forget about yesterday and worry about today.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and they do have some pretty potent arms, like you said. Like, Reed Garrett's been doing great this year. You know, Max Kranick, again, he's gotten hit a little bit of late. But again, this is a young guy who hasn't had a whole lot of success, and he's a converted starter. I do see a lot of potential there as well. I mean, he was lights out at the beginning of the season. Who they're called up Urania, or they're going to call up Urania. I don't know if it's happened yet. So that's going to give you a little bit of length, whether or not they go and use him as a sixth starter. But if not, he gives you a little bit of length out of the bullpen. So while the sky isn't falling, if the Mets hadn't started out as hot as they did, I would be very, very concerned. But right now they've got a little leeway. You know, it's one of those things where it's just kind of like, trust the process for now until they give you a reason not to trust the process.
And I think early in the season, their schedule has been very favorable. You know, they're not playing some, you know, top of the elite teams, but they are still playing major league teams who are still good. But, you know, like if they can get length out of their starters and Mendoza can cut the, you know, from the seventh inning or eighth inning and piece things together because, you know, your ninth inning, you got to get to Diaz. So that if you can get those six outs in the sixth, the seventh inning, and eighth inning, or five outs to get to DS, then the starters have done their job. And the starters have been stepping up. They've been going deep into the game, except for, I think Clay Holmes went five or six innings on Friday, maybe. So
five.
You know, they're building him up, right? He was a reliever, converted reliever. So eventually they're going to have to let him go that sixth inning, hopefully into that seventh inning. It all comes down with pitch count too, right? Well, yes. The pitch count, that famous number. You get to 100 pitches.
That's it.
All in baseball. Not just the Mets, but just everywhere.
It's crazy.
One hit shutout, get to 100 pitches, they're going to take you out.
You're cooked. No hitter, doesn't matter. You're out.
Exactly.
I remember, you know, watching Seaver and Kuzman, and that was always eight or nine innings. And then you'd have Tug McGraw come in for, you know, his save. But it was always the length. And I just can't understand everything today. And it kind of goes back to analytics and the way the guys are conditioned. But the Mets staff as a whole, they've been really overperforming. They've been really all like incredible this year for the most part. And Hefner is doing an incredible job, but there's a lot of talk, John, and you know, it's probably proprietary, but the pitching lab, you hear a lot about the pitching lab down in Port St. Lucie, and it's kind of like a laboratory in a way, you know.
They kind of dissect you. They kind of dissect everything.
What can you share with us about that? Anything?
You can go to the pitching lab as much as you want. You still have to go out on the field and execute. And I don't care what they say. They could show your exit velocity, your spin rate, your grip on your ball, your change, your angle on your hand, everything like that. That's all great and said and done. But the bottom line is you have to go out on the field and execute your pitches and hit your spots. Pitching's still the same way. You got to hit your spots, change speeds, change the eye level.
Yeah. And it's actually kind of interesting. You know, you'll ask guys about the pitching lab, but I'm pretty sure that if anyone said anything, a sniper would take them out. It is very, like, very, very, very under wraps. But it also depends on the pitcher. Like, I was talking to Clay Holmes about it, and this is a guy who is very cerebral in his approach. He likes the physics of pitching. He likes the science behind it. So he will look at all that biometric data and whatever and be like, okay, I can use it this way, this way, and this way. And I was like, well, how do you find the balance between almost too much information and, like, just going out there and pitching? And it 100% is just up to the guy. Up to the pitcher. Some guys love all that information. Some guys get overloaded by it and they kind of like messes with their head or messes with their delivery. So again, it goes back to, the pitching lab is pretty cool and it can probably teach you a few things, but it depends on the pitcher. It depends on how you use that information or if you need that information.
When I was down in camp, I was watching guys throw on the side, and every pitcher that threw, after every pitch they threw, they looked back at the big screen TV that they had behind the pitcher mound, and they were trying to see the location, where the release point was, so on and so forth. And I was kidding around with Jeremy Hefner, and I said, boy, back in my day, when the pitcher goes behind you, he'd tell you to stay back, and your release point's a little too short. Get out there a little longer. Those are the only things you said. Now, it could be too much information. Guys do like that information. Sometimes too much is no good. You know, you see guys on the bench looking at the iPad after they hit. You know, they're studying stuff like that. You still got to see the ball. You got to hit the ball, right? And pitching is the same way. That information is good, but you don't want to overload yourself with that stuff. If you think long, you think wrong. That's how they used to say it.
Yeah.
I like that. Actually, that was one of the issues that like Jeff McNeil would talk about when he would get into his little slumps, where he'd be like, well, I kind of overloaded myself with information. And sometimes that affects you in the batter's box. Yeah. And then like last year when he finally kind of broke out of it against Paul Skeens of all people, he was like, oh yeah, it turns out you just kind of like see the ball and hit the ball. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, the best hitters in baseball are Tony Gwynn's and Wade Boggs, Rod Carew's back in the day, Pete Rose. They got up there and they just, you know, let their ability take care of itself. Sometimes I think if you get too much information and you might be looking like, okay, this pitcher today, you know, his out pitch is this certain pitch, and you might be looking for that and he might trick you with something else. So it's all about reaction and being confident while you're getting in there too.
The time-honored tradition of see the ball, hit the ball. Let's talk about Soto for a second, who's gotten off to a fairly slow start. Watching him, he seems to be pressing a little bit there. What have you both noticed about Soto? Laura, you covered him, obviously, all last season with the Yankees. Your thoughts on Soto and then John.
The sky isn't falling. He's Juan Soto. He'll be all right. It's not like he can't, again, it's not like he can't play in New York. He did it with the Yankees. I think one of the things that maybe gets a little bit undervalued with Soto, I mean, you look at the start that Francisco Lindor has. Lindor usually gets off pretty cold starts. You look at the start that Pete has. How much of that can you attribute to having a guy like Juan Soto in the lineup as protection? I mean, when you look at some of the pitches that Pete's getting, it's really in his wheelhouse. He's been super clutch. So even though Soto maybe isn't hitting a bomb every single at bat, which Juan Soto likes to bunt. Juan Soto gets on base. He's not just a home run hitter. He's
incredible
line. In a lot of different ways. So I am not particularly concerned. I did notice that the last homestand, Mets fans gave him a standing ovation because he was struggling. And it worked with Lindor last year. And I think he ended up getting an RBI hit. So they haven't turned on him yet. So your $765 million man has yet to be booed at City Field, and that's good.
And they're going to have 14 more years of him, too. So,
yes.
Just getting back to Laura's point, I'm not concerned. That guy, since he's been 19 years old up in the big leagues, his on-base percentage is so high. His presence at the plate, he's, like I said earlier, his numbers will be there. He'll get hot. And I think him in the lineup helps Lindor. He's been helping Alonso.
Yes.
And everybody could just feed off of that guy. I mean, he could carry a team. You know, Mike Piazza used to carry us for 10 days to 2 weeks the way he used to swing the bat. And he's the same way. And they're winning right now without him getting hot. They're winning with Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso getting the big hits, right? Occasionally, all the other guys are jumping in and getting a hit here and there. But Pete and Francisco have been doing such a great job that, you know what, we don't really need him right now. Let him do his little thing. He's in the background, but he's still getting on base. And by them getting those pitches ahead of him and behind him, that's helping him. People don't realize that.
Oh, it absolutely does. And Pete, I mean, I've never seen Pete so relaxed and so focused. And he has just had an incredible start to his season. And I think it's going to carry through for the entire season. And it's really great to see his headspace and for him doing what he's doing on a day-to-day basis. And I think, even when people always like criticize his defense, but I think the guy, he looks like a Gold Glover in the first month of the season with everything that he's doing.
I don't get that. I have always, I have seen the defensive metrics and they do kind of grade out a little poorly or average, but he passes the eye test for me. I mean, some of the balls that he's able to pick up off the dirt, I'm like, I don't know if every first baseman gets that. I don't know if every first baseman necessarily has that reach. I have never had an issue with Pete Alonso's defense.
Amazing at the pick.
I agree. I never had an issue with him. I thought he's a good first baseman. I don't know. Someone came up with he's not that good of a first baseman, but I agree. He's picked up a lot of picks. He's made a lot of nice plays at first base.
Yeah.
Yesterday, unfortunately, he threw off his back foot. He threw a high throw to first base. That's going to happen, but I think he's more relaxed this year because, you know what, I think free agency kind of humbled him a little bit maybe, and what happens is you get a little humbled when you know the teams haven't come after you the way you thought they were going to, and he's a little hungry, and he's bearing down a little bit more. He knows he's got that one big, you know, he's making, I think, $30 million this year, and he's got an option for 24 next year. Yep. That's not chump change. That's pretty good money he's making, and you know, if he continues to play the way he did, he'll become probably a free agent again, and things might be different next year. Or hopefully the Mets will sign him to a multi-year deal during the season.
I'd love to see that. I think he deserves to be here forever.
I mean, as humbling as it was, there was also the amazing day, people chanting "We want Pete" over and over again. So I mean, the city continues to embrace him, and add that to the postseason that he had. I mean, the homer off Devin Williams in the wild card. It kind of like all came together, and Pete gets to be Pete, which is just a guy who likes to mash home runs and play first base and be a little goofy, and that's fine. That's who he is.
And he knows how to play here in New York. You know, it takes, like I said earlier, it takes a special person to play here. He's homegrown. When he was drafted, I was in the draft room, and I went to the podium, and I said with this second pick of the first round or the second round, whatever, it was Pete Alonso. So I picked him, so I should be his agent, really. So you know what I mean?
There you go.
So Pete and Jeff McNeil were teammates with my son in Double A in Binghamton when he was in Binghamton. So I know Pete for a while. He's such a good kid. You know, his wife is pregnant now, so that's another thing he's got going for him. So, you know, things have fallen into place for him. And, you know, he'll get his money. It's just a matter of time when and who's going to give it to him.
Yep. He'll get it. He'll get it for sure, especially on the pace that he's on. A final question for this segment. The Mets have had the most wins in franchise history in April, and their attendance in Citi's Field is at a record-breaking pace. I mean, they're drawing big numbers, just like Steve Cohen had wanted them to do. They are supporting the team. You both are there very often. Talk to us about what you've seen from this fan base, the electricity in that ballpark. And in a few minutes, we're going to bring on a couple of girls who were captured something pretty special. But I'd like to get your opinions on the electricity, the fan base, and how that has affected the overall organization and the team.
I mean, it's kind of interesting because, I mean, I've covered this team, 10 years now, and I grew up in Brooklyn. So I kind of know kind of like the Mets fan sort of like mentality, which is kind of a little bit of, you know, bad things are going to happen because it's the Mets, but I'm still going to root for them no matter what. Right. And this year, it's something that I haven't really seen before. I think it's optimism. I genuinely think that, you know, people look at this team and they're like, wait, things are finally falling into place. Maybe I don't have to be all woe is me. And that optimism has turned into excitement. So it's definitely a shift. I think so much of it came from last year. Last year was just fun. You know, between the mascots, between the unexpected success, between just kind of the atmosphere in the playoffs, people want to be part of something like that. And now you're seeing it at Citi Field. And then in addition to that, yeah, you got Juan Soto. And then Steve Cohen is adding all these things to make the fan experience better. And I don't think you can discount that. Baseball games are expensive. If you're going to drop $300 to bring your family to a game, you want it to be worth your while. And right now, the product is worth their while.
I agree. I think it's a carryover from last year, the team, where they played last year. I think new ownership has pumped in a lot of enthusiasm there. Alex Cohn, Steve's wife, has done a tremendous job at the stadium with the fan, getting involved with the fans, giving out tickets to fans in the upper deck and bring them down to the box seats, Met Foundation. Steve has come out and said, you know, we got to see some fans at the stadium, you know, otherwise he's not going to spend that money. They're coming out there. And again, when you have Juan Soto, he showed to listen, I went and got the best player available to help us get to that next level. We just missed last year. Maybe this player will take us to that next level. I think the fans have been great. Every time I've been at the stadium, they're so enthusiastic, so happy. They just don't know what's going to happen. There's no quit in the team from last year to this year. It's almost like when Daryl Strawberry used to get up at the plate. Nobody wanted to sit down or go to the concession stand because something special might happen. And that's what happened with this team. Something special might happen. But you don't know who's going to be that guy.
It's a day-to-day daily hero, and it's been an incredible thing to watch as a 60-year Met fan. And I love, I'm loving every minute of it. Laura, really want to thank you for coming on again to the show and tell everybody where they could find you on social media and also about your podcast is pretty cool. I've been listening to every episode and it's not just baseball, it's everything, but just continued success with everything that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. So you can find me at Albanese Laura on X. Laura writes stuff on Twitter, and my podcast is a first-time listener, long-time caller. It is a kind of a very unserious sports and pop culture podcast. So I think sports should be fun, and I wanted a podcast that reflected that.
Cool. Continued success, and we'll bring you back. We'll bring
Good
you
luck
back
to you,
in 3 weeks.
Thank you.
We'll see you at the stadium.
I want to talk about some of the things that Tunnel the Towers is doing. We get updates every single week here. America shouldn't stand for its heroes sleeping in the streets. Tunnel the Towers Foundation is committed to eradicating veteran homelessness. Tunnel the Towers will be breaking ground on its newest veterans village at the Jersey Shore. The facility in Bayville will offer permanent housing for more than 100 vets. This event is going to take place on May the 7th, and it's open to the public. And since starting its homeless veteran program, Tunnel of Towers has now provided housing assistance to more than 10,000 veterans. But the foundation isn't content to just put a roof over the heads of these heroes. They also provide services, including mental health counseling, benefits assistance, and job training. Terry has gone to a couple of the groundbreaking for veterans villages. I've gone to one right here in the town that I live in Franklin, Tennessee. It's just amazing some of the things that they're doing, especially with the homeless vets program.
Well, the guy leading the charge, Frank Stiller, he's a one of a kind. So anything he starts, he's going to finish. And I have a lot of respect for him for what he's done and what he's continued to do. I've known Frank and the Stiller family for a long time. We're both from Staten Island, and I got involved with them right after he started this, the Tunnel to Towers. And anytime I can lend a hand to him, I'm always willing to. And, you know, he has this big golf outing every year that I go to. And
yes.
It's an amazing thing that he does for the veterans, not only the veterans, but to police and firemen around the country. And of course, here in New York City. You know, what these men and women do day in and day out, they put their lives on the line so we can sleep good at night. And when a tragedy happens, Tunnels of Towers is right there paying off their bills for the family, making sure that the family is comfortable, not worrying about where the next paycheck or where the next bill is going to be paid or if they're going to be homeless. They've paid a number of mortgages. It's just amazing what they've done. And I remember the first run that I believe he did, the run here down in Lower Manhattan. They started with 500 runners. Now it's over like 40,000 people.
40,000.
The last Sunday in September, and I get to watch it from my window. I go down and watch it from the stand that they have here, and it's just amazing how it's grown and the job that he has done and the Tunnel to Tower people have been amazing.
Yeah, on the last race, looking out from your window, did you see TC running by?
No, I didn't see TC yet.
He was there. He did it. He did the run. It was crazy.
I know. Good for him. I mean, I've seen a lot of friends do the run, a lot of firemen running through there with their gear on. All of West Point comes down here. I mean, it's just amazing that last Sunday down here, they set up Saturday. The race is Sunday. By Sunday night, you would never know there was a race down here, the way they come in and out and get everything done.
Yeah, they're just amazing. And they're doing so much with baseball and baseball personalities. They're huge lifelong Met fans, the Stiller family is. And we're excited to let everybody know that David Wright has joined the Tunnel to Towers team. Former Mets captain is supporting the foundation, and we'll be hearing from David in the coming weeks as he's going to be featured in a new PSA for Tunnel to Towers. And we will return with more with our special guest host, John Franco, and two Met fans who went viral with a walk-off prediction you have to see to believe after this message on behalf of Tunnel to Towers from another Mets Hall of Famer, number 18, Daryl Strawberry.
Hey, this is Daryl Strawberry, former New York Mets. Please join me in supporting Tunnel to Towers. There are people that put on a uniform like us to play baseball game. You know, first responders put on a uniform. You never know if they're going to come back home. They're the real heroes, you know? I think it's important for us as citizens of this country to support them as much as possible. Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Let us do good.
We're back with special guest co-host John Franco. And John, I think at one point in everybody's life or a baseball fan, we have predicted an outcome to a game to get a feeling a player is about to hit a home run or a pitcher will win a game with a strikeout. But our next guest took it a bit further by calling a walk-off homer. Let's bring on two sisters, one of which did just that on April the 18th, which they captured on video in today's world of social media. It went up there pretty quickly. The hitter was Francisco Lindor. So before we bring on our special guest, Marsh, if we could take a look at that walk-off home run right now.
Okay, Lindor walk-off home run right now.
Oh,
All right, here they are. How are you doing? We are welcoming right now to the Terry Collins Show, Allie and Catherine Liano. Am I pronouncing that correct?
Leno, yeah.
Leno? Leno?
Leno.
Just Leno, L-A
Leno.
Like L. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yep.
How you doing, ladies?
Good.
Say hello to John
Good,
Franco.
How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Hi, girls. How you doing?
Nice
Good.
To meet you.
Nice Good. To meet you.
Well, welcome to the show. How long have you both been Met fans?
Forever. Since we used to go to Shea Stadium back when it was still up. So, Yeah, we've been Mets fans forever.
Where are you from? Are you from the island or Brooklyn? What part of the tri-state area?
We're from Queens.
Oh, okay.
Very nice. Queens. Went to school in Queens, St. John's.
Very local. I actually work at St. John's.
Oh, you do? Nice. Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, my only thing question to you girls is, how come you didn't catch that home run?
I wish if it came a little further.
I know. That was pretty cool.
Now,
that
would have
been even more sick.
Yeah.
Better.
Oh, yeah, you would have caught it for sure. But that was the craziest thing. It was right after the game. It was, you guys posted that thing pretty quickly after the game was over.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. And it just took off. It blew up.
Yeah. It was crazy. We knew it would be good, so had to get it out there before anyone else.
I'll tell you what. Could you predict the lottery ticket, the lottery numbers for tonight? So I'll go play the lottery.
A lot of people were commenting that.
Everyone kept asking. I was like, listen. I don't even know how many numbers go into the lottery numbers. I can't predict that.
You know what the craziest thing was is that when you called the shot, the ball actually went in your section.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We honestly didn't even know what was happening at first. You know, like I told my sister I had seen this trend online and I was like, we should just try it. But we thought we might have jinxed them if we started filming. But then, you know, Lindor had like a ball and a strike and she was like, let's just try one. And in the middle of me filming it, he hit the ball. So I had no idea where the ball was until I turned my camera and it was coming right at us. We were like, oh my gosh, like, what are the odds?
Did you anticipate the reaction that this video has gotten even from the New York Mets who said it was legendary?
That was crazy. When I got the Mets comment, I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I didn't think it'd go as, you know, get as many views or likes as it did. It like happened overnight.
Yeah. I think even Sports Illustrated got a hold of you or something too. And so, I mean, it really, you don't see that stuff, obviously, live in a way. It was like, I was telling John before we started taping that, you know, everyone has those premonitions sometimes. I think this guy could hit a home run. And
right.
But to actually finish this, as soon as you finish the sentence, that ball is on its way over to you guys.
Yeah.
And it's a walk off. The electricity in that stadium was off the chart, but where you were, you guys were going nuts.
It was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It really was.
You would have thought it was like a playoff.
Timing's everything. Timing is everything, for sure.
Yeah.
And that was timed perfectly when you started filming and he hit that home run. You couldn't ask for a better segment, better timing, better setup, I should say. It was almost like, okay, we're going to do this and you're going to hit a home run to where we're sitting. And this is how it's going to work. And it just worked out perfect. I saw it on Instagram. It was great.
Yeah, and everyone, you know, everyone in the comments is like, I wonder how many tries it took them. That was our first and only try. Like, so seriously, it was our only take.
And to make it more exciting, it was a walk-off, which was even better, right? The game winning home run. So it made it more exciting for everyone.
Yeah. And come to find out, it was Lindor's first walk-off home run as a Met, too.
It
so,
was.
Like, it was just, it was perfect. It was awesome.
Well, that was an incredible. I had to reach out to you. I mean, because we put it up on Terry's Instagram. Maybe that's where you saw it, John.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it was like once we put it up there, then other people. It just started going and going and going, and so people loved it, and it was great. And finally, for Allie and Catherine, how will the Mets finish this year? What's your prediction?
World Series. Why not? Go big or go home. We're winning the whole thing.
That's right.
Whole thing.
Well, I'm sure you'll be back at Citi Field pretty soon. Do you go often?
Oh yes, we go quite a bit.
That's good. Good loyal fans. That's what we like. This team, good loyal fans, and we're getting some good quality baseball now. So it's been a long time coming for all us Met fans. We just hope the team continues success. That's for sure.
Yeah, so. I mean, especially like Citi Field, it's been electric lately.
Yeah.
Especially like every time My Girl comes on, the entire stadium keeps singing. It's just really fun to go and watch.
It was great last year when they brought the group there to sing it too. It was
awesome too.
Well, it's an exciting place to be this season, and it just carried over from last year. I'm really appreciative that you both decided to come on and say hello today. I just felt it was something so cool that everybody would enjoy hearing the backstory of it, and just continue cheering on the Mets, and feel free to make those predictions anytime, especially in the bottom of the ninth.
Keep filming. You never know what's going to happen next.
I know. Exactly. Clearly.
All right, Catherine and Allie, thank you so much for your time today, and we appreciate it. It was great. It was great meeting you both.
Yeah, you as well.
Bye, girls. Maybe we'll see you at the stadium.
Yeah, definitely.
As a notable Mets alumni, I mean, you're now. It seems to me that you're more active in the organization. You were down in spring training for some instruction. You're at the ballpark all the time. And how important is that for you? Is it something that happened since the new owners took over, now that you're getting more and more involved and the relationship seems to be deepening with the team? So talk to us about how it is to be out there all the time now with the
Even with Mr. Wilpon, the Wilpons owned the team, I was there quite a bit. But then there was a period of 2 or 3 years where I wasn't too active, too much there, not doing too much with it. And then once new ownership came involved, they wanted to get alumni more involved. And Jay Horowitz, I owe a lot to him. I was an ambassador for a couple of years. Then I wasn't an ambassador for a couple of years. So now I'm back to being an ambassador and doing a lot of alumni stuff, and also going down to spring training. So a lot of credit goes to Steve and Alex Cohn for bringing a lot of alumni back, not just myself. And the history of the team, I think that's something that wasn't too much back with the old ownership. And now with the new ownership, they bring back a lot of alumni, a lot of former players, history of the Mets, and we appreciate that. And I enjoy being around the organization. They treat me very well. I go out to the ballpark, 3-4 times a homestand, and it's just a pleasure to be around.
Yeah, I love the way they're embracing the history of the franchise. And even when you have a tragedy like the loss of Eddie Cranepool, who was my all-time favorite growing up, with a testament of a painting in back of me of Ed. And this year they got a patch of number 7. So they really, the number of retirements with David Wright being retired. I mean, it just that history of this franchise and this organization and everybody who meant so much to it. The fact that the Cohens are now doing more and more for the alumni of the organization and bringing back folks and remembering the history of the Mets is something that, aside from everything else they're doing, is just amazing to watch and experience.
Like I said, from a former player, we enjoy it, and we're glad to be part of the organization now. And, whatever we can do to help the organization, I'm sure most of us will be willing to do it.
Absolutely. And you were one of the few team captains in the history of the franchise. And that is that's a testament to the way the organization felt about you even back in your playing days. And this year, the Mets have some really good leaders on the team. You did make an endorsement of Francisco Lindor. Tell us a little bit about why why that endorsement for Lindor and what he means to this franchise.
Well, I think, first of all, I think they have a number of players like Alonso, Brendan Nimmo, guys who have been around a long time. I think they all make great leaders, but I just felt that Lindor is more or less like the face of the organization now. guy who plays day in and day out, guy knows how to play the game, a guy who the team younger players look up to. When you see the game in progress and how if a pitcher's struggling, he's the one always going to the mound to calm him down. He's the one talking to the other infielders, setting up stuff. I mean, I saw last week when he got into a rundown and he was waving, I think it was Taylor at third base.
Yeah.
He drove, go home, you know, so he's so fundamentally sound. He's a terrific shortstop. He's just a good leader. And those are the things that you have. Guys respect him so much. The things that he does off the field, ownership, they love him. Front office loves him. He's always got a smile on his face. You know, last couple of years when he got off to a bad start, hitting a buck 50, buck 60, never got down, always smiling, always playing hard and working hard. And he comes to the ballpark ready to play every day.
Yeah, he's incredible, and the fans love him, and we just wish him the best. And, yeah, I think the Mets naming him as captain down the road, if it happens this season, that would be wonderful. What an honor it is, even for yourself, to be named the captain of the New York Mets. So
it's very rare that a relief pitcher is a captain. That's
it is. It is, you know. But your fiber and fabric is New York. And one thing I wanted to touch upon, it's 25 years now, John, since the National League Championship New York Mets faced the New York Yankees in that Subway World Series. Time flies, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. 25 years went like that, man. We're real fast. So, you know, I remember when I first got to the big leagues and Dave Parker was my teammate. And he said, enjoy it, kid. It goes fast. And he wasn't lying. You know, it goes fast. So you got to cherish every moment and every day that you're on that, you know, put a uniform on, because sooner or later you're going to have to take it off. But 25 years ago, that was a great team that we were on. Bobby Valentine was a great leader. We had a great team. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, the that Subway Series, you know, it was just to be there against the Yankees. What a great team it was, Piazza and everyone else, Al Leiter, yourself. It was just, it was incredible to see. Final question for you, John, is since you've been actively involved with the Mets organization, do you have any, you know, would you like to be further involved? Would you like to move into broadcasting? Would you like to do coaching? Or would you just kind of like hang out, be an ambassador, enjoy the moment each and every day?
I never say no to anything. You know, if the right opportunity comes along, I'll think about it and we'll take it from there. But all of the above, sure, why not? But, you know, it's I'm having fun right now. What I'm doing now, I get to travel, spend a lot of time with my family, and get to travel quite a bit where, you know, I wasn't tied down because I'm playing. So now I have the freedom to do that. So, but like I said, if the right opportunity comes along, announcing, coaching, or anything of the above, I would definitely consider it.
Yeah. Well, you've added a lot to the game. It's been really very cool to have you here today. But before we go and wrap it up, last year we were in New York together down at the World Trade Center for Tunnel of the Towers. And Marsh, do you have that video queued up by any chance? I don't know if you've ever seen this, John, but this is very heartwarming. Tunnel of the Towers and John Franco. Telling the story of the of that day and the firehouse that was right there at the location. And let's take a look at this right now.
How's it going, John?
Lenny, nice to meet you guys.
Hi, I'm former pitcher John Franco of the New York Mets. Let's go Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. On 9/11, the team was in Pittsburgh when the plane hit the World Trade Center. I immediately called home. And as I was on the phone with my wife, I saw the second plane hit. Born and raised here. You know, this is my home. It's like a punch in the stomach. When I talk about it now, the hair stands up in my arms. I think about, obviously, the people who weren't firemen and policemen who went to work that day just to put food on the table for their families. You think about the firemen who, you know, who went into that building. You know, you can't forget them.
This is the street sign. This is the door from the engine.
Coming down here from the ground zero, we weren't sure if it was the right thing to do, but we wanted to help any way we can. But then when we got down here and we saw the firemen and the rescue workers, you know, with all the soot on their face and sitting down, resting, and you could see how exhausted and sad they were.
When there's a building on fire, most people are running out. These guys are running in.
And for us to bring a t-shirt or a hat to them, you know, they saw us, they smiled, they thanked us for coming down, and made them forget for what they were doing just for a second. It made us feel good about that. We put a small band-aid on a big wound.
They fought for us. They sacrificed.
I know Frank Stiller, who started this Tunnel to Tower, and what they're doing around the country is an amazing job. I take my hat off because they are giving back. Their brother is a true hero. You know, he was in Brooklyn, ran through the tunnel with his gear on. I mean, what more could you say? There's a reason why people from all over the world, all over the country, come here to see that great tribute to all the fallen heroes and all the souls that were lost in the World Trade Center. Those two holes in the ground mean a lot to this country.
By giving $11 a month, you're joining us on our mission to do good. Go to T2T.org to make a positive impact.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that.
Right. Yeah, it was. It was good.
Yeah, they do incredible things, and your relationship goes way back with them. You've done things for Tunnel of Towers, and your support. And the Stiller family loves you, John. So it's
yeah, they're great. Good. They're good people. They're good people, man.
They are. They really are. And so we're going to wrap it up. Before we do that, I just want to let you know that Terry Collins will be appearing on May the 4th. Terry's going to the grand opening of a little league in Eastchester, the little league. And then he goes right from there. And if you want to go to that little league parade that Terry will be involved with, just go to eastchesterll.org and you could see Terry there, or later in the afternoon. This is on Sunday, May the 4th. You could watch the Mets take on the St. Louis Cardinals with Terry at the Woodbridge Brewing Company, Woodbridge, New Jersey. That's at 2 p.m. Admission is $20, and that includes an autograph with TC. Call 732-977-9481 for tickets to the event. And you could subscribe to the Terry Collins Show on all podcast platforms and on our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/ the Terry Collins Show. And we'd also like you to check out, and John, you've probably been on this show, Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz. It is a New York Mets podcast hosted by the foremost Met historian. And on this week's show, Jay brings on legendary New York Post columnist Mike Vaccaro to discuss his deep connection to New York sports history, the complicated nature of booze and the fan expectations in the Big Apple, and the challenges of returning to work after a lower leg amputation. That's Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz, available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube. So, John, this has been fun. I hope you had as much fun as we did having you here.
It was great. It was great. It was pretty easy, a lot of fun. Always love talking about baseball. So, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks to the Terry Collins Show creative director, Marsh, and to our researcher, Dominic DiBiase. For Terry Collins and John Franco, this is John Arezzi. We'll see you next time, everybody.